Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wholehearted Loving. I'm Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Georgiana.
Today, we're recording an episode for a listener who has been through a traumatic event and now has a lot of follow-up to do with that traumatic event, including appointments and just seeing that trauma reflected in the world around her and wanting some self-connection tools to cope with that. And I want listeners to know that that is totally what we do. And you can always send us a message. Instagram's probably the best way. We're at Wholehearted Loving. If there's something coming up for you in your life that you need support with, we are super happy to record episodes for that and jump them to the front of the queue if we haven't edited already and published. And this is what we do in our programs as well. People come to our calls and we help them work through whatever's coming up for them in the moment and give them tools that they can bring into their life to help them day to day. So before we do that, we're going to do a body-based self-connection practice, which is a good one specifically for these types of scenarios. And then we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a moment just to connect into body, whatever that means to you, right? What's going to help you notice your body? For me, I feel my hand on my leg, my left hand on my left leg. I am actually sitting on a lacrosse ball right now because I have some pain in my butt. And I feel my right foot pushed up against the ottoman that I'm sitting on. So that's how I'm aware of my body right now. So just notice how you are aware of your body right now. And this practice is going to need us to have our eyes open. So whenever you're ready, right, there's no need to rush it. But when you're ready, just let your eyes take in your space. And we're going to practice something called looking for signs of safety, whatever safety means to you, right? So as you look around your space, what is something you see or you hear or you feel that lets you know in this moment I am safe? Right? So for me right now, I'm in my home. All the doors are locked. The windows are closed. I have the ability to open them to get out if I need to. That's one sign I have that I am safe. So maybe this one might be a neat thing for us to walk you through how what we're noticing. And so as I notice that the door being closed and locked is a sign of safety for me, I can just look at the door. I can look at the door. I actually don't see the front door, but I'm looking in the direction where I know the door is. And I can feel my butt on the seat, and I'm just going to be with this knowing that the door is locked, and that is a sign that I'm safe for one breath, one full inhale, one full exhale. And then I'd love to just throw it over to you, Steph. Like, what's a sign of safety for you right now?
Well, so I see my front door. And I see it's locked. And then my anxious mind swoops in with contradictory thoughts. A bear could run through this door at any moment. Mm-hmm. I'd get ahead of myself. And then I have to remember this is a in the moment practice. I see that my door is locked and closed right now. And then take a breath with that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's common that our brain jumps ahead to, well, what if a bear comes and busts through the door or the window or whatever? What then? Let's just like entertain that thought for a moment. What do you have evidence of in your life right now that could be the next sign of safety if that were to happen?
Evidence in my life, not something I can see?
Sometimes it's a knowing.
A knowing. Right? Okay, I know there are no bears on the island that I live on.
Well, isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Right. But that's what the mind does. The mind's like, well, what if a bear came? And then all of a sudden we're like, well, let's assume that a bear does come. What can you see? What do you know? What's a gut feeling? What evidence do you have that you are okay, you are safe, or you could be safe, you will be safe?
So, okay, this deepens in interestingness, because the moment I said there's no bears, I was like, okay, but there are two cougars. And then my next thought was, I just don't feel like a cougar is going to come through the door, though. I don't feel worried about that. Yeah.
So this goes to this other, I think, tool we use is, even though right now part of me worries about a cougar, two cougars, what I know to be true is they're probably not busting through the window. Like, I have pretty like strong confidence that that's not going to happen, right? I'm not making this up. This is actually what you believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens when you give some attention to that knowing and notice what happens in your body?
Well, so what I noticed as soon as my mind went from bears to cougars, and I realized that I didn't feel anxiety about that, I remembered that my anxiety is not necessarily related to anything that's happening right now. And also I can then take a breath with that door. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Especially if we happen to be people who are very familiar with the experience of anxiety. Our brains go very quickly to latch onto and find the next thing that I can feel discomfort about. Then it's just going to hop from bears to cougars to seagulls to the mailman. I don't know. But that's okay. That's not something to be like ashamed of or embarrassed by. It's just knowing, hey, my brain tends to hop from place to place, worried for me, trying to protect me. And so I just got to work with my brain and let it know. Cougars are probably not busting through the window. So let me feel my butt on the seat again. Let me look at the door that's locked. And let me remember that that is one sign of safety in this very moment. Because actually in this moment, there is actually no bear or cougar at the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe we could extrapolate this. I think the cougar example is a good parallel for what this particular listener is kind of dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So what if I'm out and about in the forest and I do see a cougar in the distance, or I imagine I see a cougar in the distance?
So I've never seen a cougar in real life, so I can't really speak to what that might feel like. But I've been scared in the forest and wondered whether there's a cougar or a bear lingering around ready to pounce on me. I think what helps me is knowing, hey, can I feel my feet on the ground? Can I look around? Because sometimes when we're in that panic place, we're just so internal that I'm not even connected to my body anymore and the senses that I do have available to me. Right. So if I want the highest chance of survival, it would probably be good that I could feel my legs and my feet and I could see as clearly as possible what's around. So we practice that all the time. Like every episode of the podcast, we're like, can you feel your butt on the seat? Can you feel your feet on the floor? Can you look at something? That's sharpening your senses to be present, not be in your mind with the worry, but actually be present with what's happening right here around us. That's probably going to up your chance for survival, right? Let me think. What else? I probably think about... whether I want to stay in that area or whether it's time to get out. Whether am I going to walk more deeply into the woods? Like, I've been in this situation where I went for a hike and there wasn't any actual sign of wildlife that could harm me, but my brain went to, holy Jesus, what if there's something here? And when I feel my feet on the ground, when I look around, I realize there are not that many people here right now. There's actually no people here right now. When I had entered this hiking path, I had imagined and thought that because of the time of day, there would be lots of people, and that would be an extra sign of safety for me. And as I was walking on this path, I realized there are actually no people here. I also know that this particular path has no cell reception. And so when I have those two knowings, those are sort of more signs of like lack of safety than safety. Then I have to ask myself, is continuing to walk on this path and like feeling really freaked out something I want to put myself through? And is it necessary? And like my computation in my mind was, even if no animal's going to jump out at me and attack me, this is not a situation that I have to put myself in. Mm-hmm. I can actually turn around and leave and go hike somewhere else or come back when this is a more populated trail.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing of sometimes knowing like which things are important for us to assess danger and feel a little bit uncomfortable and push through because it's important to us or it moves us towards something that's important to us. And at which times is it time to say, no, whatever this feeling is, I don't want to put myself through it. And that thing on the other side of that is not actually that valuable and important to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if you're talking about these appointments that someone has to sit in a waiting room for, and they're having flashbacks of difficult things, I think it's important to assess probably beforehand to have a little assessment, but sometimes even in the moment, what is my purpose of sitting here? What is it in service of? Right. If it's in service of something that really matters to you, that's really important, and you assess and you look for signs of safety and you're like, you know, there are some signs of safety here. I feel a little uncomfortable, but I can learn to be with this discomfort and we can walk through some practices that help with being with discomfort. You might choose, I'm going to stay in this waiting room because it's in service of something that's important to me. I think that's an important assessment to make.
For sure. I know when my anxiety and my stories are running, it's so hard for me to connect with anything as reasonable as what is this in service of, you know? So I really love the idea of using these connection tools when they're not needed so that they become second nature.
Yes. So right now someone's asking for what can I do in moments of sort of like overwhelm and panic? And we can share all the things in the world and they can make tons of sense. But the reality is if they're not well practiced in moments where you don't need them, you don't have the muscle memory and you don't trust that as a safe option, a safe tool, safe strategy when emotions are heightened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we have to practice. And also when we were to say, hey, in those moments, I don't have the clarity of mind to make that assessment of what am I sitting in this discomfort in service of? It makes sense that in moments of freak out and panic, we don't have that ability. So don't count on yourself to have that ability. Prep for that. Know that. Have a little bit, like I've had to practice growing the muscle of having a little bit of foresight of like, you know, not imagining doom and gloom, but based on past experience, like what do I imagine I might struggle with?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if I imagine I might struggle with feeling really uncomfortable and wanting to run the heck out of that waiting room and just abandoning my appointment. And part of me knows, no, I need to be there for that appointment in service of my healing. That's the next step, right? Then I might write a note to myself. I might record a voice note. I might ask a friend to record a voice note or write me a note or say, can you call me at this time? When you know I'm going to be at this waiting room, mm-hmm. and remind me, like, what is this discomfort in service of? Or maybe can you call me to distract me so I have something else to focus on while I'm waiting and feeling some of that discomfort? So like the foresight to set yourself up with some success and some extra signs of safety.
Yeah. That makes me think of, when people are wanting to stop smoking and they map out their triggers of what would cause them to want a cigarette and make a plan for when those situations arise.
Mm-hmm. Make a plan. And when you say make a plan, it reminds me of when you're parenting and you parent from a place of, I want to be attuned to my child and you know your child, you gathered a lot of evidence of what things sort of challenge your child, what your child's strengths are, what kind of situations might be a little bit more difficult, you're going to have some foresight into that planning, right? Hey, remember sometimes when we're in that situation, it feels a bit yucky, right? But we know we need to go do that thing. I know that you want to be able to do the thing that comes after that thing, that hard thing. What would make that easier? What would make that easier for you? How could I support in making that easier and a little bit more comfortable? We've been talking lately, I think, in our priming program, Priming the Body for Peace, like how can I add a little bit of comfort to this moment of discomfort? Because you can't always get rid of the discomfort. You can't always get rid of the thing that brings on discomfort. But what we do have some power and control and a sense of agency to do is to look at what in this moment can I bring in that can add a little bit of comfort to sort of be with, hold hands with, mix with, blend with the discomfort that's also present.
Yeah.
So this is now reminding me of a hilarious episode of The Office. Did you ever watch The Office, the American version?
Did not.
Oh my God, it's so funny. There's an episode where Michael and Jan have moved in together and they're having a really awkward fight at a dinner party at their house. And Jan grabs her scented candle and is just huffing it. She's huffing the candle to try to soothe herself, and she, you know, really doesn't have any intention of soothing herself, but that's the tool she knows she needs when she's freaking out, which is what she was doing.
Well, that's the thing. So, you know, in sort of preparation for this conversation, I just mentally noted some things, I jotted down some things. It's what brings comfort in the moment, and you're only going to know that when you invest, and I use this word very intentionally, when you invest some time and space in your regular everyday life, getting to know, and I'm using that phrase very intentionally, getting to know, discovering, exploring what brings comfort to you.
Yeah.
Right? What brings comfort to you? And also, if you can look for things that bring comfort to you that don't cause any additional harm. Yeah. Right? That, like, there's things that can bring comfort, but they might bring more harm than you're looking for. And I also said things, like plural. We want to have like an abundance of options, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So one tool, one trick, one strategy that I heard some time ago is actually from a counselor who supported people, like victim services counselor. So when crimes would happen to people, people were victims of crime and they would have to testify in court. She said, I help people create a little sensory pouch. And what that is just a little, like, you know, toiletries bag or Ziploc bag, whatever you want, where you carry a few items that help each one of the senses, and it brings comfort. So for one person, it might be like a really smooth stone, but for another, it might be a little piece of satin that when they rub between their fingers, they're like, oh, this brings me a sense of comfort to have this thing in my hand, right? And then there's sound. Can you have something on your phone that's recorded? Or just even on a little, I don't know what you call those things that used to be called MP3 players, right? Something that you can have tucked away in a little pocket that you can access anytime that has either soothing sounds, right? So there's nature sounds, there's binaural beats, there's people's voices, there's words that people could say that are soothing, whether it's your own or somebody else's. So something, some sort of sound that helps settle your system, feels comforting. Smell. So this one example was someone said, every time I think of something that makes me feel cozy, I think of grandma's house when I was little, and she would make lemon meringue pie. And so this person went to one of the essential oil stores and got lemon essential oil and put that in their little sensory toolkit, sensory bag. And so whenever they would feel either a sense of overwhelm starting, just stirring. And that's the thing is, no, you have to notice when it's beginning. often people want to have a tool when you're at 90 out of 100 of overwhelm. That's really tough at that point, right? So starting to notice when it's just starting, and also preventatively, can you use some of these tools preventatively, knowing you're going into a setting? That's tough. Mm-hmm. Taste, right? Some people, like cold water can really help, like us ice cubes. Like, you're not always going to have access to ice cubes, but cold water, sometimes it's coffee beans people chew on, or piece of dark chocolate, something that, like something sour, like a sour candy, something that's like really takes your focus away from something else and like really sharpens your focus on taste can help. And then looking at things. Are there things that if you looked at pictures of certain things or certain people or words and phrases are going to be a settling experience for you, comforting? Mm-hmm. That all is stuff you can learn to discover way before you come into that waiting room, right? Mm-hmm. And you want to be using them often before you ever come into those settings where you're like, pretty sure in that setting, I'm going to feel overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the sensory piece. Did you want to ask or add something to that piece?
Yeah. I'm just thinking back on all of the unconscious soothing I've done over the course of my life, which probably would have included all of those sorts of things. I could have been Jan with the scented candle. the intention piece was missing for me, or it was sort of vague, you know? Like, I might know I need to smell this thing or hold this thing because I'm freaking out. But I think the piece that was missing for me, and all of it's still helpful to do it with or without this piece of intention that I'm about to describe, but that using it consciously as a tool instead of a treatment, I want to say, although it is still a treatment, but connecting it with your body. So if I had used these tools and instead of just going, oh, I'm freaking out, I'm going to grip onto this rock or whatever it was, to go, I'm freaking out, I'm going to grip onto this rock because it's a tool that helps to soothe me. And I actually desire to be soothed right now. And if I can feel my butt or feel my feet, that's going to enhance the whole exercise.
Yes. And if you can remind yourself, I'm gripping this rock right now or the stone because it's helping redirect my focus to something that brings a little bit more calm and comfort.
Yeah.
Right. What happens when panic is happening is our focus is on one or two main things, usually negative thoughts or like really challenging body sensations. And if we only focus on those two things over and over and they loop and they grow each other when they loop, then no wonder you feel panicked and no wonder you feel overwhelmed and no wonder you just want to crawl out of your skin and run out of that place, right? Yeah. So we only in every moment have so much energy and attention we can give to things, so much focus we can give to things. So if you start branching out and saying, I'm going to squeeze this stone while I also feel my butt on the seat, and I'll still feel whatever yucky thing I'm feeling in my body, and my brain can still go think about whatever scary thought there is, it starts to diffuse the main ones we generally focus on that make that sense of discomfort and panic bigger and bigger. Right. Yeah. So this is really growing the muscle of, I think someone called it directed mindfulness, like really intentionally shifting focus, widening the lens to something else.
Yeah.
Right. And I use this one a lot because I have gone through something really traumatic. And for me, it's not waiting rooms that sort of bring on that sense of panic. For me, it's helicopters. Helicopters, police cars, sirens, flashing lights, ambulance, fire trucks, right? Even seeing policemen. I saw so many during that time. I can feel it immediately in my body. But what I know preventatively is I've already made the link. Anytime I see or hear a helicopter, usually I hear it first before I see it. Anytime like I visually see a police car, I know already, immediately what I'm going to do is I'm either feeling my feet on the ground if I'm standing, or if I'm sitting, sometimes often I'm in the car, I'll feel my butt on the seat and squeeze the steering wheel and just feel my hands there. And then I've also added in using breath, just a long, slow, steady breath. Like that's so wired up in me that I don't have to think when the helicopter starts going. My mind doesn't have tons of time to be thinking, oh, remember that day when helicopters were flying everywhere and drones were flying everywhere? Like I don't actually go that far down that route with my head because I've linked up pretty immediately. Hear that thing, feel my feet. Yeah. Hear that thing, feel my hands. Hear that thing, long, slow exhale of the breath. Right? There's other things I do after that that help my mind, but the immediate things are those ones because those are the ones I find most quickly and effectively for me bring me back to the present instead of draw me back to that moment that was really traumatic.
Yeah.
And scary.
That's such a beautiful example, I think, for us personally. And what I want to say about this is that because you're able to know that about yourself and share that with me, that's now part of my understood experience with you as well. So I know you have this experience when you hear helicopters. I know mm-hmm. that you love physical touch and from mm-hmm. me specifically as well. Mm-hmm. So when I hear a helicopter and we're together now, I will immediately be touching you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a nice thing to be able to share with our traumatic experiences and how we can support each other helpfully through those.
It's beautiful because a lot of times we go through traumatic events alone or we feel very alone in the aftermath of it, right? So when we can share with someone who we trust, which things bring comfort in those moments, it's healing on a whole other level too. Right? It's saying like, you're not alone in your fear. You're not alone in your panic. You're not alone in this healing from this traumatic experience, right? You don't have to figure it out all on your own. And luckily, I had already been practicing this a lot when the traumatic thing happened. And I remember being there that day when really awful things were happening, holding your hand, holding Shalina's hand. But I also remember, so the physical touch really helped me. I remember feeling my feet on the ground and being like, holy crap, this thing is actually happening for real. And what I told myself to do, and I think we talked about it, is I said, I'm going to look for trees. We were in a place that had tons of trees. So I'm like, I'm just going to really focus in on one tree and really look at it. And feel your hands in my hands and feel my feet on the ground, right? Because there were a lot of things that were not good to look at that day. And so I really had to use sight very intentionally. Like if I just let curiosity draw my sight in or fear draw my sight in, I probably would have focused on things that I would never be able to, you know, I don't know, want to say never, but would have been really etched in my mind for a long time that I knew I didn't want to see. So I was very intentional about where to bring my sight, like what to look at. So, you know, when I'm looking at when the police and stuff are around, sometimes I choose look at the police. And I'll add in another piece. Look at the police and remind yourself this is not the same situation as that day. This is a totally different year, a totally different day. This is just a policeman walking down the street. It's not the same day, right? Because my body, like implicit memory, body memories are going to try to tell me this is an emergency right now because that thing that happened back then is happening again, right? And I'm even talking faster because that's what happens, right? Breath goes faster. So one of the ways to help our bodies know it's not an emergency right now is like you actually have to have that dialogue with yourself. Hey, body, I get it. You're feeling, you know, your heart is pumping, blood is rushing, breath is shorter because you're thinking it's an emergency. You're thinking that we're back in that spot. But as I feel my feet on the ground, as I look out the window and I see this, and as I remember it's 2024 and it's whatever month, I remember, I realize that that thing is not happening right now.
Yeah.
So this is a process called integrating past experiences. It's really important to do. You talk yourself through what's happening without shaming yourself. And it's called time stamping. I think Dr. Dan Siegel talks about it in those terms, time stamping, to say, we're not back to 3 years ago when that happened. We're in today. And in today, I see the door is locked. You know, whatever the things that we said are our signs of safety. And sometimes you have to talk myself through that loop several times and use my body practices several times to get to the point where there's finally this settling inside of, okay, just a moment of reprieve. Oh, right. This is not happening right now. Right. Yeah. But it's a lot of practicing these reminders. Your body's going to think you're in that moment again. And that makes sense. You're not going crazy.
Yeah.
We just got to remind it. It's not happening right now. So I do that a lot when the helicopters come. Right now I am safe. Right now I see that I am safe. Right now I see that that thing that happened 3 years ago isn't happening. And sometimes, like, one of my comforts is tapping, and it's tapping on the front of my chest in a very rhythmic way. And so I'll combine tapping with those words, right? Body, you think that thing is happening again, and I want to remind you right now, that's not happening. Right? This is just helicopter flying. That's all. So another element I was going to talk about is body touch. What kind of body touch brings you comfort? One thing that's really powerful that I really recommend for everybody to grow a relationship with is skin to skin contact. So I'll often put my hand on the front of my body when I was first learning how to use touch as a soothing tool for myself. That was a simple thing to do, you know, put my hand on my chest. You can try it if you want, if you're listening. But eventually I moved on to, and this is what I crave now. I just tuck my hand under my shirt where my shoulder is, or where, you know, the front of my chest is, and feeling that skin to skin is very comforting for me. And so that's a tool I get to use. Breath is a tool I get to use in those moments, right? So learn to find things that help you shift away from the main things that cause your panic to grow.
Yeah.
Right. So there's, if you look at Pat Ogden's work, this really helped me. She says, in every present moment consists of five sort of categories of things. And I won't get into the details of each category, but I'll just run through them quickly. One is our thoughts. You either have thoughts that are helping you out or thoughts that are creating more overwhelm and panic. You have your emotions, right? How you're feeling, sad, happy, you know, excited, whatever, angry. You have your breath and your posture, right? How your body is right now. I'm watching you and I see your chin rested on your hands. I see your shoulders sort of rounded over forward, right? That's in this very moment, that's what's happening with you. And then you have your inner body sensations. Right now, an inner body sensation I have is a tiny bit of fluttering, like just around my solar plexus. And another thing is what my body's touching, right? Right now I feel the lacrosse ball in my hand. That's another thing. And then it's like your senses, right? Your eyes are seeing, your body is touching. Those are the five components. What's really interesting in that work is often you will spend most of your focus on two of those things. And every time I talk to a client and we run through those five categories together, I'm like, where do you usually spend most of your focus? And they'll say thoughts. And I'll say, well, are they usually helpful thoughts or unhelpful thoughts? And they're like, unhelpful thoughts. Okay, great. And again, it's not shaming. It's just taking inventory. And then I said, well, what next? And then it'll oscillate. Some people are like emotions, sad. I feel sad. And I'm like, okay, so really what you're telling me is in almost most of your moments, you're focused on unhelpful thoughts and feeling sad. And they're like, yeah. Like, okay, well, if you loop through that all day long every day, what do you imagine your existence is going to be? Like an empowering sense of existence or disempowering and really sort of gross? Like, oh, it makes sense. Really sort of gross. I'm like, what about these other three categories? Do you ever shift your focus to any of these other three categories? Or do you have a habit of shifting them? Is your muscle strong in shifting occasionally to these other three areas of focus? And they said, no. And that's the work we practice on. We practice. And what they notice is, oh, like even adding in what my butt is feeling, even adding in something I'm looking at, even just changing my posture or my breath a little bit makes me feel different. I feel better. Yeah. So it's really noticing what you tend to focus on and knowing that shifting that focus is just a muscle. You just grow that muscle to learn to be aware of what you're focused on and then learn to shift focus.
Yeah.
And it makes a world of difference.
It really does. This is reminding me of fear of flying. Maybe 20 years ago, I flew for the first time in a very long time, and I hadn't previously had a fear of flying, so I was surprised to discover it suddenly at check-in. Mm-hmm. And it was triggered
because best time to remember.
My partner, who I was flying with at the time, it turned out our seats weren't together, and I hadn't realized that I put so much in sitting next to somebody that I knew and loved that when it was we were going to be separated, I was just like, oh my God, I can't, I'm going to freak out, I'm going to die. And I spent that flight, so I frantically found some classical music, and I white-knuckled my way through while listening and just going, just listen, shh, it's fine. Mm-hmm. So there was none of that diffused focus of like, if I had the piece in there mm-hmm. of, oh, I can also feel my feet and my butt, that would have mm-hmm. diluted the terror thoughts, you know, it would have given me a larger scope. And over the next few years, I flew a lot more, and I had to, so I, at the time it was unconscious, I was expanding that scope of view. So one of the things that helped me was looking at the stewards and stewardesses. I don't know if there's mm-hmm. just a one generic word for
flight
that.
Flight attendants.
There we go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, for them, this is a regular work day. They're going to do this four times today, you know, mm-hmm. thinking about how I'm in a tin can, however many thousand feet over that is not a helpful thought, you know,
yeah.
Maybe I'm going to start ranking my love of the shoes people are wearing around me, you know, consciously distracting myself until it grew to the point where I don't need to do that anymore. I can just enjoy some movies.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So like you are willing to explore what could help me feel better in the moment instead of let me keep doing the thing that makes me feel worse.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have that willingness to switch tracks. Even it doesn't guarantee that you immediately feel reprieve, but what happens is you grow that muscle and then it's not as necessary over time. Like you said, totally. Oh, I can just enjoy myself. Like I have this thing with flying too. I flew tons for decades. I flew a lot, never really felt scared of flying. Recently flying again after a long break. And I noticed, I'm like, ooh, I feel something here. Like there's some fear here. And so the way I've been working with it is it helps me to feel my butt on the seat. And then I like to put my hand on the seat in front of me just to feel a little bit of pressure. Mm-hmm. And then I work with my breath. Like I find that when I like use a long, slow exhale, that helps me. So if you look at those five elements of present moment we were talking about, like I'm using touch, right? I'm using breath. And then I use thoughts. And this is maybe not a helpful thought for somebody else. And this is what's neat about thoughts is different people find different thoughts helpful or unhelpful. The thought that I've been using recently is, well, if we go down, it's going to be fast. It's going to be over fast. If I die, probably not going to experience tons of pain for a really long period of time. Okay. And then that lasts for maybe 15 seconds. And then I'm good.
Right.
But if I just went in my mind of I'm in a tin can, this is insane, like I'm just up in the air, like my children are down on the ground in a house, like why am I way up in the sky? This doesn't make any sense to my mind. That wouldn't help me feel better. It doesn't bring comfort to be with the discomfort. We have lots of patterns of adding more discomfort to existing discomfort. That makes no sense in terms of helping ourselves feel better.
Yeah. I think this is such an important thing you're pointing out, that some thoughts, so A, that your feelings about things might change, and B, that some thoughts, some comforts that are comforting for you might not be for other people, because we're going to be surrounded by people who are trying to comfort us, and it may or may not work. And we may or may not actually know yet what's actually comforting for us. And that might change, you know, so you're describing having not been afraid of flying and then being afraid a little bit. And so I'm thinking about people who've had difficult situations and now say they've got to be dealing with, let's say, trauma counselors. And it might be that in the past, they only had good feelings about counselors. And now they're like, well, I guess now my experience is going to be tarnished by trauma forever. And I'm never going to be comfortable in this dynamic again. Giving yourself space for that to be a changeable dynamic. It's not a prescription forever. And here are these tools you can use when it's coming up in the moment.
For sure. Right? Like, another funny, I don't know if funny is the right word, thought that I have in the plane is, I wonder how many people are terrified right now and how many people are totally fine. Like,
I wonder how many are farting.
Yeah. How many are farting? Like, it's very hard to be in a state of curiosity and panic at the same time.
Yes.
Right? So I can use my brain to shift into a state of curiosity, and then all of a sudden my brain is over there creating sort of some laughter and giggles, then, and not panic.
Yeah,
that's sort of nice, right? But somebody else might say, if I sit there and try to assess how many people and wonder how many people are terrified right now, that would probably freak me out even more.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why, like, never feel bad or feel shame when what comforts somebody else doesn't comfort you. And that's not just in like emergency panic situations, just, but generally what works for someone else doesn't have to work for you. Doesn't mean something's wrong with you. And I wanted to share a story about the importance of learning how to shift our focus and what a huge difference it makes. So I'm going to share this story in the context of working out. I've worked out since I was probably 16. That makes it almost 3 decades. I worked out at the gym. So none of these movements and lifting weights are that new to me. Like, I'm pretty familiar with like going through the motions. But what's been new in the last 5 to 7 years is more body awareness. So it happened this week again, because I decided to use it. My trainer had me do something that just felt so hard. Like, I knew I could do it, but it really pushed my limits. And so instead of focusing my thoughts on, holy crap, this feels awful, I feel like I'm dying, when is this over? Like, how many more reps? Like, feel like I'm dying. And oh my gosh, my abs hurt and this hurts and that hurts. And, you know, my hands are shaking. I was like, what else could I focus on? And I think it was 30 seconds I had to do this thing for. And I knew it was 30 seconds. And, you know, if you've ever done anything hard for 30 seconds, it feels like a long time. And so I went to some go-tos. I said, I had 3 points of contact, I think. I had a kettlebell in my hand. I had my hand smushing into holding like this exercise bench. And my shin was on the exercise bench, and I tried to focus on those 3 points, or at least alternate, right? And just focus, like feel the kettlebell in your hand. That's all you got to do. And then push into the bench, just those 2 hands, feel them. And that worked for a bit. And I was like, okay, this is nice. This takes the relief off a little bit, but it still felt long. I was like, man, how much longer? My brain was still going to that place. So I think it was an Usher song that was like on the stereo at the time. And I was like, listen for the beat, listen for the beat, just listen for the beat. And like, I found the beat and I just like paid attention to that beat. And all of a sudden, 30 seconds went so fast. Like, I had to do this exercise 3 times. And like, I started getting into it the first time. And then by the second and third time, I like played around with it enough, because one of the other things I tried to focus on, there was like a gentle, silent murmur of voices from the other side of the gym that was just enough to intrigue me. And I was like, pay attention to the mumbling, just focus on it, try to decipher what they're saying. And between that and listening for the beat, like listening for the beat helped the most. That made the time go fastest. But I was like shocked. I was like, how, when you're on your third rep of something, it's going to typically feel harder. You're more exhausted. The last rep felt the easiest because by that time I had honed in on what to focus and shift my attention to. And I was like, this is sort of fun, sort of like a little game. But what it showed me is my experience can be very different depending on where I choose to put my focus.
Yeah.
And it's wild.
It really is. This is just like the watch pot never boils, you know? You just got to do something else for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was such a great reminder for me of the importance of continuing to keep that in my life, the skill and ability, growing the muscle of shifting focus. Mm. It makes so much easier.
It really does.
But as you listen to me describe, it was like a trial and data process. I started with what I knew, which was just feel your hands and your legs. But then I'm like, man, this is not working enough. So I was like, okay, what's the next thing I can shift some focus to? And I'm like, oh, okay, that works a little bit, but ooh, this one works way better.
Yeah.
And what's neat also is none of the things I chose to shift focus to, they didn't cost any money. They didn't take very much time. They didn't create any harm in my life. It's really nice to know that I have this ability to find things that I can shift my focus to that don't cause me extra harm in my life.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think there's a lot of things we can use to distract ourselves that cause extra harm. And sometimes you may feel the need to use them. There's no judgment or shame about that. But it's also a really awesome feeling to be like, I found some things that don't cause me harm and help me feel better in the moment.
Yeah. Big.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe yeah. To close, you could walk us through some kind of a practice that helps us discover what feels best for shifting focus. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is there anything else you want to say about this topic before we move into closing?
I think just give yourself an opportunity to explore, to get to know yourself. Like if I leave you with a question, what brings you comfort? Do you even know what comfort feels like in your body? Like it sounds silly maybe, excuse me, for me to ask that, but like I don't think I knew. Yeah. Like maybe sort of broadly, but like not very nuanced of what brings me comfort.
And right? You know, if you had asked me on that airplane what brings you comfort, my answer would not have been classical music, but that is what I turned to in that moment. You know, your body knows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I like the practice of like this or that, right? To help us start discerning what feels best. So let's use right now looking at something. Find something that feels good to look at. And just look at the thing and see if there's a willingness to just be present with that thing for 3 breaths and notice how it feels. Notice how your body lets you know. That feels nice. There's some comfort there, or there's some peace, or even neutrality, right? Do you know what neutral feels like? Decent feels like. And then let's go with place your hand somewhere on your body that you think feels good or might feel good, or take some time to discover where your hand feels good. And once you've found where it feels good or decent or neutral, is there a willingness to be there for 3 breaths and just allow yourself to enjoy that? And then notice this or that. Did you enjoy the looking at something? Or did you enjoy the touch? Or were they quite similar and both work? Or is there one that's like really obvious that you're like, oh, that one brings comfort way faster, or that one helps keep me in comfort more easily? Right? For me, I was actually surprised at looking at the thing, how it made me feel, because I'm a pretty go-to, like I typically go to touch. But I'm like, oh, I actually felt my breath softening and I felt some warm, nice feelings in my body. I was looking at my doll. But then when I went to touch, I'm like, oh, immediately, body settles, right? So I think my go-to is still touch. But now I realize, oh, looking at something can be something for me too. And sometimes I might try that. Right. And then I notice, hey, what if I combine the two? Go for the combo.
Oh, yes.
More. Right. More. Like if I look at something that's comforting to look at and I add touch. And then now I'm like, now I did look at something, add touch, and have it be skin to skin. Like that's ultimate for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And then I also know if I now add a slow exhale, that's like taking it next level, right? Yeah. So you're starting to like notice, hey, how do I puzzle something together that just feels decent, good, better, even better?
Yeah. There's so much nuance to this, and it really is a process of discovery and noticing your body's responses. I noticed I looked at this painting, which brings me joy to look at, and there's one shadow in the painting that, in my view, is awry. And my brain started, it was like, I love this painting, but that shadow, I was like, I'm going to look at something else. And then I looked at this big, beautiful leaf. And that was a different quality of comfort. And maybe there's something to do with nature in there. I'm not sure. But it definitely felt better to look at. And then adding the hands, I've got places I often put my hands. And so I went to default to that. And then I realized, no, actually, it would feel better to have my hands under my knees right now. So I put them there, which requires me, the chair that I'm in has got arms. So it's fine for a second. And then my arms are digging into the arms of the chair in this uncomfortable way that I just let happen for a good 30 seconds. And then I was like, oh, that's adding discomfort, which I could change right now. And just incrementally adding more comfort.
Yeah. I like that. Incrementally adding more comfort. Yeah. Right. And we do this a lot, like on all of our live calls and priming calls, like when we're working one-on-one and in groups with people, like do something and notice what your body's experience is. Is it like better, worse, neutral? And people think like, oh, but I didn't feel better. Hooray! You notice something that doesn't feel better and you notice how your body tells you it doesn't feel better right now. That is a really, those are really good skills to have.
Yeah.
Right? So if we want to try maybe a couple more, this one I really enjoy is like placing one hand on the front of your body, noticing how that feels. And then taking it off. And like do the this or that. Does hand on or hand off feel better? And you might have to do it a few times to notice. For me, hand on feels better right now. And then the next layer of this is two hands, right? Put the other hand on top of that first hand. See how that feels. And take that one off and go back and forth with hand on, two hands on, or just one hand. Two hands for me feels better. Right, and I notice with Steph, because I can see her, like she's moved her hands to a different spot on her body. I'm assuming because that brings more comfort in this moment. Right, so just with that simple practice, we train the body to start paying attention, this or that, which one adds more comfort. And like, it's odd, wild, weird to think that simple practices like that help us know when we're in panic, when we're, you know, when old traumatic stuff is getting stirred up, old body memories are getting stirred up. Like when you spend time noticing what brings incremental comfort to you, you're going to have a lot more to access in those harder, tougher moments. Yeah. And you're going to trust yourself. That's the other thing. I can go into, like, I walk through life pretty confident in my ability to either bring soothing to myself, no matter what happens, or call on someone who I trust to help bring soothing. When you can get to that point, life feels a lot easier. Life feels more fun because you're like, no matter what happens, how much discomfort I'm in, I have options. I have options that are going to bring some extra comfort to this state of yuckiness. That's a good feeling. It's a good knowing to have. All right. And then I don't spend as much time. Yeah. I don't spend as much time panicking about the things I don't know. Like the unknown, which the unknown used to freak me out big time. Right. So.
Thank you, Gigi.
The invitation to discover what brings you comfort, incremental comfort.
Yeah. And what a great thing to undertake when you're waiting for a scary appointment to happen. You know, that's a great shifting of focus, noticing what brings you more comfort, incremental comfort. Yeah.
You need something to do.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just want to put it out there is if you've gone through hard things, if your body has gone through hard things, like you don't have to suffer forever. Like shifts can happen. Yeah. And if you still feel like you're suffering, it doesn't mean something's wrong with you. It doesn't mean that can never change. It doesn't mean you're doing things wrong. I just want to, you know, really let people know that there's ways to help ourselves be with really hard life experiences and feel more empowered, feel more resilient, feel more comfort in the body, right? It's possible. Yeah. Baby steps.
Baby steps. And thank goodness. And thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to wrap it up and we'll see you guys next week. Please do like, follow, and subscribe. And if anything we've said here today has been helpful for you, please share with somebody that you care about. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.